Welcome to Culinary Convo. I am your host, Devin Ream. The coffee is poured and your spot at the table is open. I've got my mise en place, and if your mind is open, let us begin. Hey, everybody. Welcome to A Plate in Time. I'm with my lovely wife, Kaylee.
Hi.
And we have one of our cats back here and a plane.
Right there. Yeah.
Right there. But then we also have them on our lovely screen. Look at our boys. Yeah, they're so cute. Are you ready to see what 1991 held for us?
Yeah.
Yeah. As we talked about last time, I was a little one-year-old overall baby.
Yeah.
I was just walking around.
I wasn't even a person. So.
Well, yeah.
I have no idea.
Yeah.
I don't even know what happened in 1991, so.
I mean, lots of stuff happened in 91. Can't remember if it was 90 or 91 when old H.W. Bush went to Japan and was very ill. And he, I think, threw up on the prime minister or the emperor of Japan. I want to say it's a prime minister. I don't think he threw up on the emperor.
Yeah, I don't think it went up that high.
Yeah, I don't think they would ladder. Let him go to the emperor and be like, bleh. But, 91, I think the war in Kuwait was still going on. Lots of just like, hey, we're out of the 80s type stuff, right? So we'll go over that along with many other things in 1991. First up here, foodreference.com. We got ourselves Arby's. Opens up its 2,500th restaurant in Mexico City.
Wow.
So, esto es espectacular, carne en serio. Yeah.
I bet that looks nothing like the real thing, though.
No, absolutely.
Which
not.
Is upsetting.
Yeah. But, I mean, it's got all that on it. It just doesn't look just, that way.
Yeah, it's not that high.
Yeah.
That's like at least 12 inches. But I'm sure the actual sandwich you get is like three.
Yeah. It's just like,
if that.
Maybe.
Yeah.
You know, it probably just fits in a nice little wrapper.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. The next one here, General Mills opens its 500th Red Lobster seafood restaurant in Portland, Oregon.
General Mills, like the cereal?
I'm guessing so. Yeah, General Mills. I mean, they own so many things. They're one of the five food giants.
There must have been a change, because I know it's what, like Darden? Because they own Red Lobster. They own,
let's see.
They own Olive Garden.
Red Lobster?
Some other stuff.
Red Lobster. They are owned by Red Lobster Management, LLC, Thai Union Group, and Golden Gate Capital are their parent organizations. But back in 1991, they must have been owned by General Mills. Who owns Red Lobster? 1991, Charlie Woodsby, restaurateur. That was the guy who opened it. Our history. It doesn't include 1991.
I didn't know General Mills, if it's the same one, was in on the game.
Right. They were in on the game.
Wow.
I'm sure of it.
Wow.
I would think so.
All right.
I was just trying to stay on top of it. You have so many questions with these. So I'm trying to stay on top of it.
Sheesh. I'm trying to just not, sit here and just.
Right. You're being interactive. You're being interactive.
Is that not what you want?
It's engaging. It's engaging content, everyone.
Yeah.
Yeah. So in 1991, another big thing happened in the food world that maybe it was a blip, but nowadays it still holds true. Salsa sales overtook ketchup sales for the first time in dollar amount. So not in weight, but in dollar amount, which salsa makes sense. It would be more expensive than
salsa's
ketchup.
Salsa's so good. I didn't know they would be tracking that.
Yeah. They were like, uh-oh, salsa's catching up. And then out of nowhere, they're like, ketchup, salsa, no. And then overtook.
Salsa is so, so good.
Yeah, salsa is great.
Tacos, tortilla chips, nachos.
Yeah.
Which is technically tortilla chips, but you know.
Right.
Yeah. Just good.
It's just good stuff.
Just good.
Yeah. One of my favorites is still, for whatever reason, the Pace. Because it's so, like, it is nothing like restaurant salsa whatsoever. Yet it has its own distinctive, like, yes, this is tomato.
Yeah, it's and like tomato other things. Water.
Yeah.
Chunky tomato water.
Yeah, yeah. You know when you get Pace.
I love salsa verde on street tacos.
Right.
Oh,
right.
Gosh. So good. Yeah.
But another thing going on during this time, the average U.S. food prices. White bread was 70 and a half cents. Grade A large eggs were $1.10 per dozen. Milk was $2.76. I'm seeing cat hair on my microphone.
Yeah, it's
that
on
was
mine,
weird.
Too. It's really
and these cats, they just keep rubbing the microphones. But
wait, I'm sorry.
Sorry, what?
I was laughing because...
What, the supermarket sweet
guy?
Yeah,
this looks like a cutout.
I don't know. It might be. I Googled grocery store ad 1991 and this popped up.
I mean, honestly, the show should have never left.
No.
I know
no.
they brought it back.
Right.
Temporarily or whatever.
With
but,
Leslie.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I don't know. Sorry. The photo is throwing me off.
Yeah.
You guys got to watch this on YouTube.
Right.
You gotta
or
see.
Netflix. It was on Netflix for a while.
No. The podcast.
Well, yeah.
You
got to
watch it.
Whoops. Yeah,
anyway,
watch our show on YouTube.
I was like, you
Culinary
can't be
Convo.
On Netflix?
Yeah. I was, yeah. Culinary Convo, next on Netflix.
That,
yeah.
We would not
man.
Be living
right.
here anymore.
I was going to say, I wouldn't talk about my cats, probably. But no, yeah, for us, check us out on YouTube where you can find Culinary
Convo.
Watch us
Convo. There and then watch this
right.
show
on Netflix.
Netflix.
Yeah, Supermarket Sweep. And then the new one with Leslie. Mm-hmm. Yeah, from SNL fame. And then, sorry, I got distracted. Milk was $2.76 a gallon. Chicken was 89 cents a pound. That is nothing.
Yeah.
Wow. Ground beef was $1.65 a pound.
That's not bad.
That ain't bad, folks. And then also, 1991, the Hudson's Bay Company, founded in 1670 as a fur trading company, announces it is selling its fur business due to declining sales. I'm guessing part of that was PETA, the whole, like, we're going to put blood on everybody's fur coats. Fur trading was a big historical thing. It got food, it got clothing, it grew and expanded the West. May have helped in the whole, like, you know, Native American getting rid of people type of thing. But
I think it had a time and a place.
Right. Right.
But compare the 1700s with 1991.
Right.
Why do you need fur? They came up with faux fur.
Yeah.
Like a long time ago. I don't know when.
Is faux fur made of plastic?
Probably.
Yeah. That's the only thing.
You
My
replace
thing is
one
I,
bad thing with right. another.
My main thing is I guess you don't have to have fur anything. Main thing is if you know, back then especially, you know, you a bear comes running after you, it's either you or the bear. And it's like, I'm going to use this whole bear, meat, bone, whatever, and then I can use the fur as a coat.
It is very respectful to use
the whole animal,
all parts of it.
Yeah. And granted, you made the mistake first by getting in its territory.
True.
But sometimes it just happens that way.
Hi, Biscuit.
Yeah, Biscuit, you couldn't skin him. He's a cat, and they say, oh, there's more than one way to skin a cat. No, there's zero ways to skin this cat. I can't get litter off his butt, let alone skin him. It's a tough sell.
This is not about food anymore.
It got a little twisted. But then, the first sumo wrestling tournament ever held off Japanese soil in the sports hit 1,500-year history.
This is sick.
Begins at London's Royal Albert Hall.
Absolutely legit.
Yeah, and I know what some folks are thinking, which is like, how does this relate to food? Big jump. in Japanese food, cuisine, what have you, once they arrive, right?
Oh, yeah. Well, then, and they have to eat a lot.
Right. Yeah. They got to have their rice. They got to have all their ramen. They got to have all of it. Yeah.
Chicken karage.
Mm. Yeah.
The vending machine hamburgers.
Squid.
Japan's a dream.
Yeah. Japan's great.
I have to go.
Yeah. Also, 1991, I'm sure the sumo wrestlers, they were probably reading about this at the time. The U.S. patent number 5 million was issued to Lonnie O. Ingram of Tyrell Conway and Flavio Alterthum of the University of Florida. Actually, that was three different people, by the way. I'll reread that.
That's such a long name.
I was going to say, I'm like, wait a minute, is that a company? And then I was like, oh, wait. So, yeah, Lonnie O. Ingram, Tyrell Conway, and Flavio Alterthum of the University of Florida. The patent was for a genetically engineered form of the E. coli bacterium that converts plant material into ethanol. Hmm. Yeah. Ethanol would then go into many a gas tank to fill up everything so we could drive around to all the restaurants.
And then we're like, that's bad.
Yeah.
Let's change to electric.
We're like, isn't ethanol an alcohol? And they said, a little bit. And let me tell you about the science. We're like, I'm too bored. Give me another Jack Daniels. And it was enough, you know? But yeah, the next one here, last remaining Horn and Hardart Automat closed its doors. Yeah, it was located at 3rd Avenue and 42nd Street in New York City. Frank Hedart and Joe Horn opened the first Automat on June 9th, 1902.
What a shame.
Yeah,
I've always wanted to go to one of these.
I know. Very classic. Yeah. At 818 Chestnut Street in Philadelphia, the birth date of modern fast food. Yeah.
What a shame. I hope there, I would think maybe there's some out there.
There are a
just
couple.
Just not like this chain or company.
There is an Automat, because we watched a CBS Sunday morning segment on Automats.
Yeah.
And I think there's one that still exists like in Chicago, and it's in a hotel, I think. And they're like, now it's a cool niche thing, and we still sell the famous ham and cheese. And
going back to Japan, I think this would be
a
big thing.
Yeah, they've got versions of Automats in Singapore. Dancing Bacons, if you ever want to come on our show, oh my gosh. Yeah, Dancing Bacons on YouTube, everybody. Look it up. She travels all over Southeast Asia and where she resides, which I think is in Singapore, right? Mm-hmm. Right. But yeah, they've got Automats, and they're like hyper tech crazy now. And there's like one area and it pops up and it's like, oh, did you want Peking duck? And you're like, what? From an Automat? Like, what? So yeah, got to check that out. Dancing Bacon, shout out. Ever want to be on the show? Please hit us up. culinaryconvopod @gmail.com. Do it. Anyway, next one. We've got the first McDonald's in Beijing. Yeah. We got Ronald McDonald sitting on top of the building. looking like he's like, hello, China. I am ready to take over your people with my little hamburgers. Yeah, the first McDonald's in Beijing, China opened. It was the world's largest McDonald's with 28,000 square feet, seating for 700 and 1,000 employees. That's crazy.
Why does it have to be so big?
I don't know.
I mean, I know China is like the most populated or second most populated.
Yeah,
but how many people are going to this McDonald's at one time?
I don't know.
You know, to have 1,000 employees. That's like a mall.
Well,
it's like bigger than a mall.
Speaking
isn't
of
it?
Well, speaking of malls, and closed in 1996 to make way for a shopping center. So even Chinese people were like, I could get a better burger elsewhere.
I'm
pretty sure.
Going to
and
be...
I don't mean to voice that like it's a, anyway. They're like, I can get a better burger elsewhere.
Well,
that's what
you
they
can.
You know. Yeah, yeah.
I'm, you know,
they could probably homemade make it better.
I'm gonna get hate, but McDonald's is overrated.
Yeah,
I
you know
Yeah. As I'm getting older, when I eat it, it makes me feel bad.
Yeah.
And I don't like that.
Gets you super gassy. Oh, man.
Yeah. I'd rather go to a different fast food place like Popeyes.
Oh, yeah.
Or Raising Cane's or Shake Shack.
Well, and see, that's the thing, though. Two of those are mainly chicken. Like, you know.
I love chicken.
My thing is, McDonald's is like a once-a-year thing for me.
Yes.
I get a hankering for just a McDouble. And then, like, the chicken nugs. Everybody knows they've got a crazy good.
Eat it.
Right.
I'm not pretentious or anything. I'll cave in.
Oh, totally.
Trust me.
Yeah.
But is it going to be a regular standby for me? No.
No.
No, it's not that good. I don't care what anyone says.
I tell you what. You know what was mind-blowing?
And you know what? Sorry. Just last thing. I'm very passionate about this. Their french fries are not the best fast food french fries.
What is?
I like Burger King fries.
Yeah, I do too.
I really do. And Wendy's.
Oh, Wendy's.
Wendy's fries are probably the best.
Yeah, they had pretty good fries. I will say, for me, it's Steak and Shake. Steak and Shake has the best fast food fries. Because their shoestring. Well,
the issue, though, is that's regional.
Yeah, it's very regional.
That's not West Coast.
There is not very many big chains that do shoestring fries. McDonald's, I think they're classified as shoestring, kind of, but it's like...
Freddy's does.
Yeah, but they're not in every state, as we know. They should be.
No, but I feel like they're getting more commonplace than Steak and Shake at this point.
So right.
Freddy's is really good.
Freddy's is pretty good, yeah. But no, the thing that I was thinking is, like, mainly the big, like, bombshell thing for me, and granted, this is going to date me because I was like a 90s kid, the McFlurry. Bruh. When that came out, that was like game changer overload. Because if you were a kid, you couldn't get a McFlurry at the time anyway. I don't know now, but at the time, you couldn't get a McFlurry with a Happy Meal. So if you were going to order a McFlurry, you had to, like, put on your big boy pants that day, and you were like, oh, man, like, what do I get off the main menu? Because, like, most of the time the cheeseburger was, like...
Could you not get it separately?
You could get it separately, but then you had a drink, and you had the McFlurry. And my mom, she was, she was stingy with the old pocketbook when it came to the Happy Meal. She's like, you're getting whatever's in the Happy Meal. And they give you a toy, Devin.
Yeah.
Be grateful
that
they give you this toy.
Toys.
Oh, yeah, man. Yeah. I got, like, this little Astro Fighter type of thing. It was like a little spaceship. And I'm not kidding. I don't know how many times I cried because I lost that thing. Mm. Yeah. And my parents were like, it is so tiny and it's pointy and it's going to hurt if we step on it. And I'm like, where's that thing? And I'm
my
just running around.
My mom worked at McDonald's in the 90s.
Yeah.
The late 90s, because I was born in 95.
Yeah.
But she said that she would always bring home extra toys.
Right.
That were in the Happy Meals. So I wonder, with this huge Beijing, you know, 1,000 employee McDonald's, were they able to give extra toys to their kids?
No.
Or food, they had to, or...
I mean, they made way for a shopping mall, so I got a feeling that not very many people went there, so there might have been a lot of toys available.
It's just, it's excessive.
I think what happened was, like, I think in China, they have so many, like, China is the encyclopedia of their own food. They have so many different categories of food, it's insane.
Oh, yeah, they have, like, thousands of different...
Yeah.
Cuisines, basically.
Yeah, based on tens of thousands of years.
Yeah.
And so it's like one of those things where you show up with a cheeseburger and they're kind of like,
what?
Yeah, this is neat, but I could eat something that tastes very similar to this and it comes with like a pound of noodles across the street for way cheaper.
Well, and McDonald's, like, uses a lot of dairy too, with cheese everything.
And that's not as big.
No.
Yeah. In Asian places.
Poor Beijing McDonald's.
I know. Yeah, the Ronald McDonald. Wonder how long it took to take that guy down. Oh, my gosh.
I wonder where he went.
I don't know. Yeah. Somebody's got him. Either that or it was, like, thoroughly destroyed.
Demolished.
yeah, just, like, broken down.
Poor Ronald.
Poor Ronnie. Anyways, next one here. Charles Elton died. Charles Elton was an English biologist who first developed the idea of a food chain. poor Elton. He succumbed to the food chain. Yeah.
Food chain?
Yeah. Like in nature, the food chain.
Oh,
right?
Okay.
Grass
okay.
goes to the cow. The cow yes, goes yeah. to the... Yeah, whatever. Or yeah. like, oh, yeah, the bird catches the mouse and then
yeah, I
snake
get it.
Catches
I
the bird.
I don't
then,
know what...
Yeah.
I was thinking like fast food chain.
No.
You know, like...
No.
I was thinking that and I'm like, oh, what'd yeah. he start? But...
No, yeah, he did the food chain, and then that made fast food chains go, well, we're part of a fast food chain, and then Elton was like, oh, no, and he passed away in 1991.
That's what happened.
He was like, why are they using my words? And he went away. Yeah, anyway, the next one here, the world's largest burrito was made.
That's amazing.
Yeah, created in 1991. It was 1,126 pounds.
How long was it?
I don't know.
I thought you
it
just
didn't
said
tell
longest.
Me. It, well, let me rephrase that. Yeah, because you might have caught me there. it's the world's largest burrito. Okay. And so it doesn't say how long it is. It does say
I was
its
about
to weight.
Say, you can't say it's the longest thing
right.
and then you tell me how much it weighs. That's
right.
Not
that's
the same
a little.
Thing.
Yeah. So, no, it was the largest.
It's clickbait.
Yeah, it was a little clickbaity. That, I think it got me.
That's a very
quick.
Big burrito.
Right.
Yeah. Probably fed a lot of people.
Yeah, I mean, look at how many people are filling it.
Yeah.
Like, once again, watch us on YouTube.
Yeah.
But yeah.
You're missing out.
Yeah.
Last week, the cats were fighting.
Oh, man.
They might do it again today.
You
don't
never
know.
You never know.
I'm wearing lipstick today.
Oh, my God.
You wouldn't know that.
Yeah, you wouldn't know that.
You know, Devin's wearing green.
I'm wearing my favorite, one of my favorite shirts.
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. Good old, now the name, like, literally, you said it, and it fluttered out of my mind.
Why is it my fault?
It's not your fault. I'm just saying, like, it was in there, and then you were like, green shirt. And I'm like, you just went
this
away.
This is not my fault.
But it's a little lunch tray, and it's an organization that a very famous chef from Noma works at. Oh, man. I'm going to Google it now, because I got to do this, folks. I'm sorry. I am so sorry, everybody.
You.
It's going to bother me. Yeah, yeah. Famous.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Noma chef school lunches. What is Chef Dan Giusti? All right. And it is called.
Doesn't start with a
oh
C
my
or
gosh.
Something.
No.
Just click on one of the things.
Why is that happening? Dan Giusti. Brigade. Brigade is what it's called. So yeah, Brigade, go on their website. This t-shirt's like $20. Very nice shirt. I'll admit I've got holes in it now.
You wear it like
right.
twice a week.
I know, so. I wear it all the time. Yeah. But Chef Dan Giusti doing crazy good things over there. But yeah, so do that. Yeah, and you'll see it on YouTube. If you hang out, you'll see it. It's really cool.
Yeah.
Yeah. And if you listen to Our Last Meal, you'll figure out why lunch trays matter to me.
Mm.
Yeah. Mm. That's right, everyone. So, anyway.
It's like a podcast inception.
Right. Right. You come for Culinary Combo, you can go to Our Last Meal. Yeah. It just happened so
you
fast.
Get to Joe Rogan.
Oh, God. Ugh.
That was the only thing I could think of. Sorry.
And then also in 1991... The famous Paris cooking school, Les Écoles de Cordon Bleu, opens a branch in Tokyo, Japan.
Cool.
Yeah, Les Cordon Bleu. They're like, do you know how to make Les Cordon Bleu? And they're like, why?
There's a lot of French influence in Japan and vice versa, too.
Yeah, Korea as well.
Yeah.
They have the what is it, Parisian baguette, right?
Paris
or Paris
baguette.
Baguette. Yeah.
That's in Beaverton.
Yeah. It's a good place.
I'd like to try it.
Yeah. And then, not to be outdone by old Mickey D's, Burger King decided we're going to make the world's largest Burger King and open it in Budapest. Because you the best. Burger King, you the best, Budapest,
Hungary, really?
Yeah, Hungary, Budapest, Hungary, Burger King. Talk about so many puns for these people in newspapers at the time.
Is this still open?
Yeah. Yes, it is. This is actually a modern day photo of it.
Oh.
Yeah, and when I was trying to look, I was like, why does it look like that? Like, what is going on? Because I saw multiple photos. It's actually like four stories. of Burger King.
Whoa.
Yeah, there's like a little miniature like restaurant basically on each floor of this place. And it's connected to another building like next door. And I don't know if it's office space or if it's rentals. I have no idea.
You know, but, the juxtaposition between these centuries-old buildings, European buildings.
Right.
And then adding, you know, McDonald's or Burger King.
Yeah.
Like, you know, posters and signs and all of that stuff. It's just, I've always thought that was kind of crazy.
Yeah. You go to the Roman Colosseum and then you look across the street and there's a friggin' Subway. You're like, why is that there? Like,
it's just, you know, it's kind of like visually like, it feels like it shouldn't go together.
Right, right. And that's the thing is I think that, like, you need to listen to your intuition there. You know what I mean? Like, something didn't fit her.
I know I was just rooting for Burger King not long ago, but I'm not going here.
Even for the fries?
When I go to another country, I'm going to be trying their food.
Yeah.
I'm not going to go to what's familiar because I want to, while I'm there.
Right.
I don't live there.
Right.
So I want to try new things.
Yeah.
Not Burger King.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Not McDonald's, not Domino's, who got ousted from Italy.
Yeah, that was a crazy story recently. Man, oh man. I didn't even know that they were there. If that makes any sense. I just thought, like, why would Italy have Domino's? Well, like, that doesn't make any sense.
I mean, there's some McDonald's in Italy.
Oh, yeah.
And I think a lot of it is a big tourist pull.
Yeah.
So that's probably why Domino's was there, too. But it's like, compare Domino's to, you know, Neapolitan or Roman or Florence. Oh, yeah.
Or your mother or your grandmother making
or
friggin'
they're cooking.
Yeah.
Exactly.
Like, I mean, like how many people
are you gonna choose,
honestly? How many people have a Nona pie, right? Where it's baked in the oven, the Sicilian slice where it's super thick. It's like focaccia with tomato sauce. Why wouldn't you have that over Domino's? Like, let me get your garlic buttered crust.
Like, I don't even like getting Domino's much anyway.
Yeah.
Like, here in America, I like Papa Murphy's more.
Yes.
So
cook it yourself.
But I don't know how they thought that would go well. So I'm surprised that this Burger King in Hungary is still going.
Yeah. I think if there were, because we were on a little Domino's kick for a while, because it's quick, right? You order it, they deliver to you pretty fast. So it's like, okay, it's convenient, it's cheap. The main thing that I would ask is Domino's has like a super thin crust. It's crackery crust. Mm. I wish it wasn't cut into squares. I wish it was cut into triangles. And that may not seem like a huge deal. A St. Louis style pizza is in squares and it should remain in squares. And that's a thin crust pizza. But my main thing is for Domino's anyway, it's like everybody wants that slice that they can just dig into. Make it, I don't know, a large pizza is $7 or something, like whatever. Because the problem that I foresee is that if you get a medium pizza, and whether it's regular crust or thin crust, there isn't that like major Mondo bite sinking into the pizza itself.
Yeah.
And that's the thing that I miss, and that's why if you do, like, Papa Murphy's, you get, like, a large pizza, and you dig into it. Or, you know, if it's thin crust, you still want that digging moment. And with Domino's, if it's cut into a square, and you're in this little thing, and you're like, oh, let's dig in, and you're like, it's like eating a saltine with some cheese and sauce on top. I love the crispiness of it. But anyway, that was a small tangent of Domino's. If you want to hire me for your, you know, next retail venture, let me know.
This is Life with Devin.
Right.
Just to let you guys know.
Yeah.
This I'll is just, an insight into Life with Devin, everything.
Somebody's like, has anybody ever heard of Ramune? I'm like, hello. Let me pop in here a minute. Ramune is from Japan.
It goes on for 20 minutes.
Yeah. I'm like, don't try to get the marble out. It can be dangerous. And Oh, man.
Anyways,
another thing in 1991, Japan related, they agreed to stop using drift nets. to catch fish or whaling, what have you. Whenever you Google drift nets, you will become incredibly sad. Like,
or if you
so
watch Blackfish.
Oh, this was worse than Blackfish. This was worse than Blackfish.
I don't want to know.
Exactly. Don't do it, everybody. I got like a cartoon image here, and that's all you need to know. Don't Google drift nets in 1991. Don't do it.
I took oceanography in high school, and we had to watch that. Man.
Yeah. Changes your mind pretty fast.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. But the next one here, University of Minnesota Fruit Breeding Program introduced the Honeycrisp apple. Yeah, which I figured out Honeycrisp apple is supposed to be a blend of like green, yellow, and red apples. Didn't say which specifically, like Red Delicious or, you know, Granny Smith for the green. It just was like, supposed to be a perfect blend of all of it. Sweet, sour, tasty, savory, blah, blah, blah. And it's like, it's called Honeycrisp.
I don't know if I've had one.
I've had many in my day.
I really usually only stick to Granny Smith.
Right.
Because I don't...
Yeah.
I don't know if it's Red Delicious or whatever, but I don't like the, like, granular tasting apples.
Right. Yeah.
I'm just not a fan.
Yeah. But no, I mean, Honeycrisp, I know at least two or three people that Honeycrisp was, like, their favorite apple.
Is it more, like... solid like a Granny Smith, or is it kind of more like mushy?
More mushy, I would say. I mean, all apples, it depends on how long you let it sit.
Yeah, but right? I mean, like an ideal.
Yeah, an ideal honey. I mean, any ideal, it's going to be crisper, right? Like, it's going to crack.
But you know what I mean.
I know what you mean. Like, I would say, like, peak ripeness Honey Crisp, it's way looser than a Granny Smith. Sorry, Granny Smith is uptight.
I guess so am I, because that's really all I eat.
Yeah. But the next thing here, we're going away from one segment of food timeline, and we're going to the next, which is different foods that were coming out in 1991. We got ourselves a good one here, because this is like where Frankenfood, I think, starts to come up quite a bit. Even though this one, even if you call this one Frankenfood, I'm going to disagree with you and tell you that it's actually pretty okay as an alternative. Turkey bacon. Bum, 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 bum.
Only since 1991?
Yeah, 1991. That's at least when it gained, like major success. Okay. Yeah.
Love turkey bacon.
Yeah. It's pretty dang good.
I'm not going to act like it's a substitute or, you know, you can easily swap it out for pork bacon.
Totally.
I think turkey bacon is its own thing.
Yeah.
And it should be respected.
Right.
It is so freaking good.
Yeah.
Especially on a BLT.
Yes.
It is so good.
Yeah. It isn't too rich. It doesn't try to overpower tomato or lettuce. No, and it's like you said, I don't like it when people say, but it ain't bacon. Like, yeah, no, it's not. It is its own thing. It's not.
Like, at least for me, I'm not trying to argue that.
Right. Yeah.
You know, but that doesn't mean you have to poop on this.
Yeah, don't do that.
No.
That's
unsanitary.
But yeah, going over a food timeline, they had to say about turkey bacon. No doubt about it, Americans love turkey. Once or twice a year. Yeah, only Christmas and Thanksgiving there, buddy. And then in 1991, they said, we're going to give you something different. Generally regarded by Americans as holiday whole bird item, turkey marketers faced a uniquely challenging situation, positioning their products for year-round sales. Whole birds are heavy, challenging to store, require hours to cook, demand a supersized roasting pan, and yield more leftovers than any other meat product, which is very true. Like, way too many leftovers. Especially if you get the neck and the gizzard and all that kind of stuff. Like, man. The result, the turkey industry has a long tradition of employing creative ways to sell their product. They are brilliant marketers on several levels. The most famous example is the TV dinner. Swanson, a turkey grower, needed a way to dispose of an overabundance of unsold Thanksgiving turkeys. With a little experiment, they confirmed this product froze well. Voila, a brand new culinary genre ensuring year-round product sales. Sliced turkey continually outsells chicken in the sandwich and deli market, which I can believe.
Yeah.
I mean, that
sliced chicken's weird.
It can be, yeah. Like, it can be really kind of, it doesn't have an overwhelmingly salty, savory flavor. It kind of just has this meat flavor, and you're like, that is not what chicken breast or thigh tastes like.
I mean, obviously, like, you know, like the, I don't know, you know, like chunks of it, that's good.
Yeah.
But not like the processed sliced chicken. Mm-hmm. That's really weird.
Yeah, it's weird. But turkey marketers, they paid close attention to health recommendations resulting in consumer trends towards low-fat, non-red meat health recommendations. Turkey London broil burgers, turkey meatballs, turkey sausage, and turkey bacon are marketed to consumers on the health, less fat, white meat is better for you angle. In the case of items imitating cured pork products, consumers question the healthy for you claim. Commercially cured meats of any sort contain chemicals, nitrates, preservatives, and other items, cited by health officials as unhealthy. Today's bacon-loving consumers have several choices, but one common goal, getting the most flavor for your money. And the flavor of bacon comes from fat, any way you slice it. So our survey of American newspaper articles suggests turkey bacon was introduced to the American public in the early 1990s. The product is viable today, but the health claims are debunked. Yeah, they are. It's not that much. It's like healthier by literally 1 degree of separation.
It's just because it's less fatty.
Right.
That's really all they can go off on. Yeah. But yeah, it's way more salty. Well, not more salty than bacon, but it's very salty. It's very chemically.
Yeah, the smokiness does not resemble cured bacon at all. But this article from 1991, it says, after nearly a dozen years of development, the Lewis Rich Company of Madison, Wisconsin is introducing turkey bacon on a national basis beginning now. The product has been in market test for more than a year, and consumers love it. Consumers looking for an alternative breakfast meat are pleased with this new choice. As purchased, turkey bacon is 80% fat-free. Couldn't get rid of the other 20. And offers good news for those consumers who are eating less bacon made from bark, stated Charlie at Mikian, director of marketing research. Lewis Rich, the nation's number one turkey processor, pioneered this new breakfast meat product. A major challenge was to develop a turkey bacon product with the look, taste, and texture of regular bacon. There's very little shrinkage, and a 12-ounce package contains 18 to 28 slices. Way more than regular bacon.
Yeah.
But yeah, it's going to be available in supermarkets nationwide. And that was from February 5th, 1991.
You know, 90 years ago, they were just as wordy.
Right. Totally. Yeah. Yeah. Definitely.
Oh, my gosh.
Yeah.
They're very excited.
Yeah.
For turkey bacon.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. This one from the Richmond Times-Dispatch, April 3rd, 1991. I liked towards the bottom here, it says, the truly amazing thing is that the white ribbon running through turkey bacon is white turkey meat, not fat as in regular bacon. It took Lewis Rich nearly 12 years to develop this product. Turkey bacon is fully cooked and can be eaten right out of the package. However, brief heating and crisping brings out the qualities you associate with regular bacon.
Why would you eat it?
I don't know. I wouldn't think it would taste okay raw. I just wouldn't think that at all. Then again, if somebody hands me a hot dog raw, I'm fine. I'll eat a hot dog.
No.
Yeah. See, that's how I know you were born mid-90s and I was born in 90.
I don't think.
I'm telling you, anybody pre my era, it's like, did you eat cold hot dogs? Yeah, of course we did. We ate cold hot dogs all the time.
I'm not saying I've never done that.
You used to drink water from the water hose.
We walked in 10 miles of snow to get this.
Right. We husked the corn and then shoved it in our ears. And it's like, what?
I'm not saying I've never done that. It's just not good. You got to heat it up.
Yeah, depending on the hot dog. There's some hot dogs that, yeah, if you eat it cold, I question your integrity. Like, I think literally down to your character, something is wrong.
Probably.
Deep down in your soul.
Probably. Yeah.
But, yeah, the next trend. Oh, do you have a question?
No, I was moving. Sorry.
Oh, you're moving. Okay.
Yeah.
But, no, the next trend in 1991, earthquake cakes. Yeah.
What is this?
Yeah. So I have only ever had earthquake cake, I think, once. And it's a blend of like chocolate cake or brownie cake mixed with a cream cheese, pretzels. Like, it's crunchy. It's supposed to make it look like an earthquake happened, which, you know, very San Francisco, right? That kind of thing.
Yeah, very triggering for us here
right.
on the West
Coast. Yeah, on the West Coast. Right. Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah.
The big one.
Yeah. Yeah. But it says the earliest print reference we find to earthquake cake, this is via foodtimeline.org again, to earthquake cake was published in a review of Vivande Portavia, a box lunch caterer stationed at San Francisco International Airport. Perfect spot to do that. It is described thusly. Earthquake cake, a flourless chocolate cake with a cracked top at the nation's table, San Francisco. Jeanette Ferrari, New York Times from 1988. The chef owners were Carlos and Lisa Midioni. How was it named? One of Midioni's devoted clients was overheard saying, "You don't think they're going to sell that cake, do you? It looks as if it's been in an earthquake," and thus the cake was named.
Hmm.
So somebody was like, "I did a marvelous job," and some just smartass went in there and was like, "It looks like it's been to a blender. Oh my God, like a birthday cake. Oh no, 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 earthquake." And then they were like, "We're going to call it that just to spite you."
I've never heard of this.
Yeah, it's not very popular anymore.
No.
Yeah, this cake is perfectly period correct. Born in a time when decadent chocolate desserts were to die for, flourless chocolate souffle cakes exploded into molten lava cakes and Mississippi mud cake made cracked tops fashionable. Box mix earthquake cakes, on the other hand, were actually inspired by a real earthquake. Earthquake cake, this recipe came from my hometown, New Madrid, Missouri, which survived an earthquake predicted for December 3rd, 1990 that did not occur. The original recipe called for a 13x9x2-inch baking pan, but my only experience using that size proved, to use a pun, disaster. I now use an 11x15x2-inch baking pan. This is a delicious and very rich cake. But where an earthquake is concerned, who is counting calories? Says Sue Anton. Earthquake cake is a dieter's disaster, said the Houston Chronicle, February 6, 1991. The recipe here, you have 1 cup of coconut, 1 cup of chopped pecans, 1 package of German chocolate cake mix, 6 ounces of cream cheese softened, 1 stick Oleo, which is margarine, 1 pound of confectioner's sugar, and then grease and flour your pan, spread the coconut, but basically just throw everything in there. Kaylee's most lovingly dessert anything. It's like a dump cake. It's a
I
dump
don't like that word. You don't use that word with food.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, yeah.
Don't do it.
She wouldn't have made it
Stop.
Outside of any church potluck in the late 90s, early 2000s. Hey, we brought more dump cake. She's like, dump, dump, dump. And she just would run around. No, no. Yeah. It's
I'm only this crazy, you know, around people I know.
Right.
Not in public.
Right.
So I wouldn't do that in public.
Right. Well, and see, that's the thing is, like, what if I showed up with a full cake and then somebody's like, "Is it a dump cake?" And you're like, "No, Sharon, it is not a dump cake."
I would
grit
my teeth and bear it.
Oh man, I would do the other. I'd do what I did.
I know you would.
Yeah,
because you're on another level.
Yeah, I'd tell them no more. And then, not to be outdone in 1991 by your earthquake cake, the prior mentioned chocolate molten lava cake.
Now this I've heard of and had.
Totally. The recipe itself,
oh, so good.
It came out, I believe, in the 60s. Chocolate molten lava cake came out. Now, 91 is really when it kicked off and was like big in the lexicon, because it started showing up in a majority of restaurants and a majority that you could like cook it at home.
Yeah.
They were finally divulging the secret. But definitely rich cream filled cakes, cookies and pastries have been around for hundreds of years. They became very popular in the 19th century. Chocolate cake likewise debuted in this time period, although it did not make a regular appearance until the 20th century. Pain au chocolat, possibly a progenitor of chocolate molten lava cake, was popular in the early 20th century. Our survey of articles published in USA newspapers and magazines confirm recipes with this moniker began surfacing in the early 1990s. Print evidence confirms similar recipes existed in the early 1980s. Think Maida Heater. In the food world, this is not unusual. So essentially, you have all these, you know, recipes for this type of cake, but they're just not calling it molten lava cake. They're calling it, like, sprout cake or something weird. Yeah, they're like river cakes. And you're like, what? But this is what it was. And it was considered comfort food. Molten cakes originated as a humble pudding cake promoted by Mazzola and Betty Crocker. So, yeah. 1991, this article, I believe it's from the New York Times, February of 1991. New Yorkers are calling it the best dessert ever. Tiramisu has had it. Creme brulee, watch out. Both of these things outlasted molten lava cake, like, easily.
They're older.
Yeah, older.
And more iconic.
Yeah, and better, I would say, than molten lava cake.
Yeah.
Yeah, the confection in question is a small, warm chocolate cake that, when cut, oozes with intensely rich molten chocolate. And it's like, yeah, no, man, those other two desserts, they beat it out, man. But yeah, so that was from, November 27th, 1991. The cakes that take New York erupt with molten chocolate.
There you go.
Yeah, yeah.
So. Yeah, I'd rather have tiramisu or creme brulee.
Totally.
And I feel like you can, like, more easily share those than molten lava cake.
It's a very one-person thing.
If you try to share molten lava cake, then you each get, like, three bites.
Right.
And that's not fun.
That's not fun, man. Not at all. And plus, like, Domino's makes molten lava cakes. So
those are good.
Those are pretty good. Yeah, but, you know, still. Like, it can't be that. They're not making tiramisus.
Or creme brulees.
Or creme brulees.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Next time on Plate and Time, we go to 1997.
Oh, so same decade. Okay, I was two.
Yeah.
So
yeah.
Maybe I'll remember some of the things.
They're going to be like, I don't know, Taco Bell soft tacos. Yeah. And you're like, oh, that was my jam when I was two. Yeah, I rocked hard with those.
I know.
Like,
I don't know about that.
Yeah. And I'm going to be like, Winnie the Pooh cookies. You're like, dude, yeah, I rocked Barney. With Winnie, Barney.
Barney.
Dude, Barney. Oh, man, Barney was huge.
My parents said that I used to call Barney, Bonnie.
Bonnie. Yeah.
With like a Boston accent or something.
All I remember, and I think that's why Biscuit's coming in, is...
He heard cookies.
Yeah. Every one of my friends, except me, had that stupid stuffed purple dinosaur.
Yeah,
and I didn't have one. I was like the only kid that didn't have a Barney stuffed thing.
I didn't
have it. Yeah, I had a green tummy and little feet with the yellow nails and all that. And I'm like,
I was also Bebop one Halloween. Mm-hmm. The little green dinosaur.
Yep. Bebop. I
was
the sister.
Very cute.
It was Barney's sister, wasn't it? Wasn't it Barney's sister, Bebop?
No. I don't think Barney had siblings.
I thought
that
he just
like
had
his
a
friend.
Sister. Oh, it was his friend.
And then
friend.
There was BJ.
Right.
The yellow one.
The yellow one. Yeah. But no, Bebop, Barney. Yeah. Clean up, everybody, everywhere. Everybody remembers that. I'm going to get copyrighted to death for that. I don't know. But we'll see everybody next time in 1997. Thank you, my lovely wife, Kaylee, for joining me.
It was
on
fun.
A Plate and Time in 1991.
I didn't know any of this, so.
Yeah. Yeah.
That's pretty cool.
Sumo wrestlers eating, you know, molten lava cakes.
The biggest
while,
McDonald's ever.
Yeah, McDonald's had
biggest
a huge
burger
burrito.
King ever.
Yeah.
91 was iconic.
Iconic.
Yeah.
Yes. We'll see everybody next time. Goodbye.
Bye. Bye,
everybody. See you next time on Bleeding Time.
This episode of Culinary Convo was written, produced, edited, and created by yours truly, Devin Rehm, and is a part of Mouthful Productions. Please check us out on Twitter, Instagram, Facebook at Culinary Convo, and our website, culinaryconvo.com, for recipes, episodes, resources, and send an email to culinaryconvopod@gmail.com with your fan suggestions or recipe submissions. You can also support the podcast by going to anchor.fm/culinaryconvo1/support so we can purchase cooking or audio equipment to help create a better podcast, or by using the funds to help further the exploration of Culinary Convo by ordering subscription boxes, food kits, or ordering food products to review. So shout out to our first supporter, Convonaut Dylan. Thank you. I also want to give audio credit to Soundtrap for our intro, transitions, and outro music. Thank you.